Good morning and welcome on to this morning's Cabinet meeting. Do we have any apologies? No. Not full attendance. Order of business is part of the agenda. Any declarations of interest?
Thanks, Chair. I declare an interest in item 5.1 and I'll leave the room. My wife's an employee at Paradise Primary School.
Okay, thank you. Item 4 is minutes of the previous meeting. Members okay with a correct record? Agreed. Any matters arising? Okay, thank you. Item 5, public reports 5.1, inspection of Paradise Primary School. Mary.
Thank you, Chair. We're pleased to present the outcome of an inspection by Education Scotland who carried out an inspection of Paradise Primary School and Nursery in November 2018. As you can see from section 2.2, the grades indicate 6 times good and 1 times very good and 1 satisfactory grade in raising attainment and achievement in the primary school. Members should note the strengths that the inspectors found in the school and the nursery provision. Section 2.4 sets out the areas for improvement, which includes developing robust approaches to assessment and evaluate improvements and initiatives to raise attainment for all. What the inspectors pointed out at this stage was that there wasn't a progression. They couldn't see the progression all the way through, as opposed to there wasn't progression. It's just that to actually see a child from P1 or nursery all the way through. Section 2.5 sets out the inspection was carried out in Mr Tim Wallace's second last week at the school, and we've appointed a new head teacher who will start in early March, and she will continue the improvement journey for Paradise Primary School and Nursery. And the recommendations are as set out in Section 4. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions, Jim?
Mary, I understand for the report that the inspectors have said that no intention of going back, but what kind of internal inspections will we do just to follow that up? Is there something we'll do just to make sure everything's going according to the plan?
Yes, this will be closely monitored in terms of following through on the inspection. But just to make members aware, what we have done as an education authority is we're now doing pre-inspections in all of our schools. So we've inspected a number of our high schools, we've inspected a number of our primary schools. So our team go in and they would do as an inspector would. They look at certain points, 3.1, 1.2, just ensuring everything's up to date. And the feedback from the inspectors are they've found this to be very helpful. So the schools are well aware of what's coming when inspectors come in, and this will be followed through just the same.
I think I was aware of the fact that we did the kind of pre-inspections. It was more the other side, you know. Once we've had an inspection, do we go back at some later stage? Especially when if they're saying they're not coming back, I think it's important that we keep that up. That's good. That's fine. Thank you.
Vic.
Thanks, Leader. I mean, I particularly focused on the. Although the whole report is good, I particularly focused on the nursery class where the report has got very good in amongst it. And I think the thing that jumped out at me was the second bullet point, the energetic children who value play. I like to see that in nursery. Nursery is always believed is such an important part of child's education. So I think this is a good report. I think the school has to be congratulated, and Jim has already highlighted the need to follow through on one or two things, but this is a good report, and particularly on the nursery side, so well done to the school.
Mary?
Yeah, can I just point out this is one of our flagship schools, so we've brought community facilities together with our primary, our nursery and our GP surgery, our library, our leisure facilities, all of that together, you know, and this has only been open for a short period of time, so to get a really positive inspection during all this period of change is really good. You know, we've got our colleagues from the voluntary sector in there doing early years as well, and all of that you wouldn't notice if a child is in the mainstream nursery or in the partnership nursery. And when Mr Swinney came to open the school officially, he was blown away by the facilities, and even he couldn't see the difference between a partnership nursery and our nursery, and I think that stands us in good stead going forward with the implementation of the 1140 hours.
Okay. Any other comments or questions? I think, Mary, we just echo your words here, given the circumstances of the move to the new school, the bedding and everything. It is a very positive report, and I think we'll join in congratulating them. The recommendations are set out in section 4 of the report. Are members happy to approve? OK, thank you. Now move on to item 5.2, Adult Social Care, Quarter 3 Performance Report. Mr Short.
Leader. So the Q3 report in front of Cabinet today, again, I'll just pick out some highlights that I think I would want to identify, as well as some challenges ahead. So Q3 has been a busy time for the partnership in relation to developing the strategic commissioning plan. That will be in play from 2019 to 2022. So a significant amount of kind of community engagement and staff engagement during that. So work continues, and that will be brought forward for signing off towards the end of Q4. The work is progressing at pace in terms of the development of the recovery hub at St Andrew Street. And again, that will bring in together health, criminal justice, mental health, criminal justice and substance use services into the recovery hub, and we aim for that to be open in May and June time. And also just noting the report of the good work that's been done by the unpaid work team, and that's been recognised nationally at a kind of major event in Glasgow. So key developments there. I suppose just in noting some of the performance within the report, we continue to be challenged in relation to waiting times for occupational therapy and social work assessments. We have made investment from the IGB reserve to increase in capacity in those teams, and more up-to-date information we have at management level would suggest we're beginning to see a reduction in both the OT, the occupational therapy and social work waiting times as a result of that investment. We continue to be challenged in relation to absence management, particularly in key areas, and particularly within home care, and we're working closely with the teams there, both in terms of how we support staff to be well and keep well, but also supporting managers at times to have some of those difficult conversations and supporting people to get back to work in a safe and timely manner. And I suppose, finally, just for noting the ongoing challenges in relation to care at home. We had a useful discussion at the Integrated Joint Board recently, and that's something that we have been tasked to bring options back to. And again, just noting that that remains a key high-risk area within the Council at this point in time. Happy to take any questions, Chair.
Thank you, Alistair. Questions for members? Jim?
Yeah, on page 30, there's supporting services users through the use of technology, the first item on that page, and it's the about switching telecare provision from analogue to digital. I would expect that, you know, our ability to provide as good a service as we possibly can to vulnerable people, and at the same time do it as efficiently economically as possible, will rely on us transferring the systems from analogue to digital, yet we seem to be well behind on that. There's comments here in terms of the kind of reasons, which a number of them seem to be external, but I'm just wondering how we intend to kind of push forward on this, because I would expect that a few things will kind of hinge on being able to transfer from the analogue to digital.
It's a fair point, and it's a frustration that we've been feeling as well, in terms of that actually there will be significant investment required, and so we need to make sure we get that investment right. We've made provision for that investment, and we've been that sits within a capital budget at the moment. We've been pushing very hard with government to kind of come up with a solution to this, and work continues, and I will happily bring further updates back to Cabinet, but it's a frustration that we have. One of the bits we also need to think about is the sense that there's a huge level of opportunity that going digital brings us, that actually we can really move and accelerate our technology-enabled care within folks' homes. So we're equally keen to get into that so that we can, you know, we've been testing out Alexas and everything else that goes along with that. So it really opens up a whole new arena for us, but we are hamstrung slightly by the broader procurement issues, but we are in of what feels like daily contact to try and get a resolution to this. But we have made provision within the budget when it comes in that we can do that switch over.
Okay. John, did you want to speak?
Thanks, Derek. Alistair, it was just about the absence management. I'm just wondering if there's been any change in the reasons why people are off, and I'm just reflecting, I know in some other local authorities, stress and anxiety is becoming the number one reason for absence, and I'm just wondering if that's a similar issue in this service.
I don't have the exact level of detail about what the main reason is. What we do tend to find when we've reviewed, particularly in relation to home care, it tends to be musculoskeletal. So it's actually just it's the nature of the work alongside an ageing workforce. So what we're trying to look at is about how we're using, you know, ensure that equipment's been used properly, doubling up as and when required, sort of thing. So it historically has been less stress related and been more around that kind of joints, aches, pains in relation to the MSK issues. But I can certainly provide that level of detail.
Is there any other questions? Alistair, a couple. I just wonder if in some of the areas, and it's quite helpful now to have these alerts, high risk warnings, okay, and a known ragging system for us here. And the two areas that you've got as a sort of high risk part of that is the capacity of the voluntary sector to meet the council's requirement and meeting the growing demand. At the last IGB, you spoke quite a lot about what we're doing to try and to attract people into adult care and that, and how we're working along with trying to retrain some of your own staff, but also attract staff for pupil numbers and for out with the organisation, because the point being made quite strenuously by a lot of people across the country, I've got to say, is every time the council advertise for additional care workers, they quite simply leave another care provider to apply for the job, so there's no net gain, and it's about attracting more people into the care work in that. Could you maybe add a bit to, and let members know some of the work that's going on there to try and attract people in?
Yeah, thanks, Derek, and it's a good point. So two approaches. One is both in working with the lifelong learning team within the council has been to look at their kind of how we attract folk who are presenting either through job centres, etc., in terms of looking for work. So actually, who are a little bit further away from the employment market, so being supported by the lifelong learning team to make them job ready. And actually, what we're finding is that for many of those folk, they hadn't really considered a career in care. So that's bringing more folk in. So we have ten folk signed up for that will be starting imminently, if it's not already started. Linked to that is a relationship we've got with we've developed with Serenians, one of the voluntary organisations within Midlothian, who are also going to run a similar type project for us, but again just seeing if they can attract a different person that onto the programme. And we're working with with McSense in Mayfield so that we can actually begin to create a pipeline of folk moving on to. So what we're looking at is those who aren't traditionally looking for that career in the care sector, as a way of actually recognising they might be a little bit further away. So by putting a kind of 4 to 6 week programme in place, it brings them up, and also they get almost a guaranteed interview and likely kind of guaranteed hours at the end of that. So there's almost a built-in probation, supported probationary period that we can then iron out some of those difficulties. And for some, it will be, you know, some young folk is about what it means to maintain a job, but actually your responsibilities within that. So that for us is hopefully bring forward, we recognise there'll be an attrition rate as a result of that, because actually these folk are just slightly further away from the job market, but we'd aim to be bringing 15 to 18 carers on through these two programmes, which will have a significant impact on overall capacity, which will then allow us to repeat that on a kind of 3 to 4 monthly basis.
Okay. it's helpful, that, because obviously it's one of the things that we find all the time is just the sheer capacity rather than the willingness to provide a care package. It is the sheer capacity to provide that, and talking to colleagues across the Lothians and indeed across Scotland, it's the same. It's attracting people in there. We have a fund there to help retrain our own staff, and it's important that we use that fund and we try to attract staff that are displaced and actually look to try and encourage people to transfer over into this vital role, because we have the pressure in the early years in adult services and recruiting enough staff for that. So it is really vital that adult social care are taking that as much proactive steps, because adult social care and children's services will be fishing for the same pool of people. So it's just making sure that we have that staff in there. Are there any other questions or comments anybody wants to make? Okay, with that, Alistair, thank you. We move on to 5.3, Children's Services. Is that yourself, Mary? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. So please find the quarter three report for Children's Services. It is for 2018-19. There's a small typo there. The report highlights seven key areas of developments, improvements and mainstream work within Children's Services. So firstly, they've highlighted the PACE programme, Improving Outcomes for Looked After Children, a national programme with the Scottish Government and Centre for Excellence, aiming to have a permanent decision for children within 7 to 12 months. If you look at the line it says there, the Scottish Government and the Centre for Excellence for Looked After Children view the level of change and improvement for Midlothian's most vulnerable children as a phenomenal achievement. So we've agreed to continue this PACE work. When Joan Trenent first talked about the PACE programme, the idea was 9 months, and she was shaking her head thinking, I don't know if we're going to manage that. And here we've got it between 7 and 12 months, so it is a phenomenal achievement of the team. Also, improving the mental health of all of our children and young people. We're in the midst of a 100-day challenge. Today is day 25, and that's where a whole group of voluntary sector, us as a health education, we're all together working out how can we improve outcomes for children. So we're in day 25, so Joan's leading on that today. The participation of our looked after children, our champions board is going from strength to strength, and this week there's a series of workshops where we'll talk about the corporate parenting role, and Ashley Stevens, one of our former looked after young people, she's leading on that. Our child protection figures, we're at or around the national figure, and you know they always have a slight fluctuation one way or the other, so we're there or thereabouts. Looked after children away from home, which remains below the national average, and we had our campaign, A Midlothian Child's a Midlothian Child, and we've gone from a high of 23 children looked after away from home in the last 3 years down to 8 children who are in very expensive residential accommodation or looked after away. However, the other side of that is our looked after at home children remains higher than the national average, but work is ongoing in this area. There's 83 children who are looked after at home. The Scottish Child Abuse Inquiry, we have a strong team in place for that, and we had members of the Scottish Abuse Inquiry team came to visit Midlothian, and they commented on our exemplary data. So again, the two things are matching at the top, the PACE programme and this, the data that we're producing for these things is really important. The risks are set out, but members will be aware that the budget within Children's Services is always open to fluctuations, and the needs of young people are paramount. This can be influenced by secure placements, which you know that costs us upwards of £200,000 per child if a child's placed insecure, or young people requiring specialist supports. And you know that we've reported here over the last 4 years, every year we've had one child who's had a level of need that cannot be met either anywhere in Scotland, sometimes anywhere in the UK, and this has led to big budget fluctuations for Children's Services. I'm happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Jim.
Thanks, Convener. I think we should be congratulating the staff on the PACE programme. It's really a vital service, and it's good for the council to be in a position where other councils are coming to us for details of learning that we've gone through that, and getting the recognition that we're kind of leading the way on that. So congratulations to the staff for that. I noted on the paperwork here, though, that under the risk register that we've got here, that they're unlike every other risk register that's throughout the papers here today. There are a number of parts here. The risk control measures are missing. We've only got risk control measures against the first two items on the risk. I'm sorry, I'm talking about page 55, 56, 57. Is this an error? Is there something went wrong here? If you could just maybe explain why that isn't there.
It's operator error. And I've checked it out this morning because I looked through it this morning and I've been given an explanation, but I don't think it's satisfactory. So it says, if nothing's changed, nothing pulls through, and I don't think that's correct. So I'm putting it down to operator error and we'll get it sorted out for quarter four.
It'd be helpful if, I think, as soon as that sorted out, that if we could get it circulated. I'm sure there are risk control measures in there. I wasn't expecting there not to be, but it would be helpful to see them as soon as they're available, if that's possible. Thanks.
John.
Thanks, Derek. Mary, you mentioned this a panel for children in care, like a champions panel, and I'm wondering, it's always struck me for children in care that, if you like, they have the most state intervention in their lives but are so distant from the decision-making powers. And I'm wondering what we could be doing either as a council administration or as a council as a whole to be reaching out to these young people and trying to get them more involved in council decisions and these sorts of things. Is there something that we could be doing? I'm thinking particularly around the budget consultation process is another work.
Thank you for that. We actually have a champions board, and these young people comment on our reports that we have, budget reports and everything else. They have a very strong voice, but they're young people who are in transition. So sometimes it can be difficult just to have a consistency. However, we have appointed Ashley. Ashley Stephen is our young person who was formerly looked after. So she is appointed by this council to be engaging with our young people. We've also got John Brown that's in, he's appointed to the Champions Board, so they're working with our looked after young people. I think the difficulty for me is not our looked after and accommodated young people. I think those that are furthest away are those that are looked after at home, and the outcomes tend to be less good for those because we have a lot of statutory obligations to those that are looked after and accommodated. But the looked after at home, we're doing some work on. We've now appointed a virtual head teacher, and that head teacher will have an overview of all of our looked after children, not just those looked after away from home. We've also appointed part of an educational psychologist who will have that role as well. So there's a lot going on for our young people in terms of their educational outcomes. In the education report, you'll see it has improved, but not to the stage that we want it to be. So there's a lot of work going on that we are engaging with our looked after young people.
Thanks. Mary, you had mentioned the 100-day challenge and we're currently on day 25. What happens on day 101 and beyond?
Okay, so we got the funding from the Scottish Government, from the lottery for over 3 years, and it was about how we change our systems. So if anybody mentions a young person with mental health, immediately think CAMHS. Well, it shouldn't be. There should be, at all stages, supports for young people. So whether that's at the school door, whether that's through your youth clubs or whatever, it can't just rest solely with the CAMHS organisation. And this is about us changing our mindset. So we've got three subgroups just now that are working together, and they're looking at what are the simple things we can put in place. Now, we got the funding for this, and I'm sure people are bored with me saying it, and I bore myself saying it. It was young people, actually, that said to us, we've done this piece of research. It's not that great. You know, we only got 200 responses, but here's some ideas that we've got. And we were saying, no, that's phenomenal that you've got 200 people that are really interested. The young people weren't asking for swimming pools or access to various things. What they were saying is, what we want is an open door. So if I go to a teacher that I like, could their door be open that I can speak to them? Do I always have to go through my guidance teacher? Can it just be someone that I got on particularly well with? So we've been doing a whole range of work, you know, with our health colleagues, you know, in the voluntary sector, with our youth workers and whatnot, about how we improve things. So this group of people, which includes young people, includes looked after young people, so they're in small groups. So they're going to come up with the ideas that we call tests of change that we can then try out. And that helps over the next 3 years about what facilities we put in, what changes we make, or what training that we do. So day 101 will be how we implement some of these things, or test them out, try them out, see if they work, then get back and say, well, actually, that didn't work as well as we expected, or that was a really great success. How do we roll it out across Midlothian? So that's what happens with the 100-day challenge.
Aye, the 100-day challenge is actually all about after the 100 days and as a vital bit of work. Can I just say that I attend the Champions Board. I'm a member of the Champions Board as well, and it's one of the most challenging meetings I've ever been at, in terms of the approach of the young people and how they discuss things. It's quite refreshing, and I know that John has met with some of the young people for the Champions, that I think some of them certainly are participating in the Champions Board during the budget process, and it might be helpful for John to come along to a board meeting. I'd take it that would be in order, Mary, for that to happen, just to see what goes on, John, and maybe just interact a wee bit with him. Yeah. That's
okay. Is there any other points anybody else wants to make? Okay, just for me, Mary, and the challenges and risks, as normal, we can see the Children's Services budget. There are significant challenges in there, and I'm hoping that you can give some assurance that the revised budget for this year is a more realistic budget. I'll take it, the point being made here is there are cases come forward, it's a demand-led service, and we can quite often get things coming around the corner that we didn't expect. So I'm just looking for some assurance there that this year these budgets can be brought in time and on budget. We're talking in the risk that we have two residential houses in Woodburn and Pennycook open with a capacity to take 10 young children, and the risk there that if it goes above that, I'm looking for some assurance here that whilst we're looking at a further development of 1,000 council houses, that we're working across the board here to see if there's need to either extend the current premises we use or to provide new placements, taking in the growth over the next 10 years being at 13.3% growth, and it seems quite clear it's young children or families with young children that are moving to the area now. You can see the input for school has gone up, so therefore by natural progression it is likely we're likely to see a higher rise of youngsters that we're having to assist and to help here. So I'm just looking for some ways he'd been assured here that we're having a corporate look at this, and we're doing the best to keep the prices down, because there's a significant cost to when we have to put youngsters out with normal services or out with Midlothian. I'm also looking at, take the point that Jim makes in the explanation you've given for the risk being missing. We have one high-risk area in the workforce capacity, and it's just to see some of that's out with your control. We're talking about, and I'm aware that you might not can give me all the detail, but just to see if we can get some of that detail when it does come from John, that we are working across board, because additional health visitors isn't always within our control, and it's just to make sure again we're working with Alistair's team through the IGBs and that, and through the Scottish Government to look at training and for other areas where we're short of staff, to make sure where we struggle to get staff, that we're trying to look within house first to look at retraining opportunities for anybody that we think could pick this up.
Okay, Chair, you've asked a number of things there. So twice you've asked for assurances. So one was assurances on the budget. I would love to sit here and say to my elected members that I will deliver on budget, or Joan will deliver on budget. But I won't say that because I like my job. The problem that we've had the last 4 years, we've had one child every year for 4 years, that the cost for that child's care has been phenomenal. So we have one young person at the moment whose care package is £800,000 for the year, the level of care that that young person requires. Now, that young person will then move to Alistair's service. So I would love to give you the assurance. Last year we had another young person, and the cost for that young person were about £600,000. You talked about the five-bedroom houses. We've actually got three houses, and we had three four-bedroom houses. We made two of them into five-bedroom houses because that one house we're keeping for these very high-cost packages. So, again, we're working with Alistair's team. We're working with East Lothian to say, could we adapt one of these houses for these very high-cost packages and it not cost so much? Instead of it being a one-to-one, it might be, you know, two-to-one, or, you know, we can look at the care. The one thing about Mrs. Trenent is she's very, very inventive. She's always thinking about different ways of supporting our young people. You also know another strain on the budget is our young people that we have to look up to, look after to the age of 21. So again, we're having to liaise with Alistair's team and housing in terms of requirements for those young people. Now, for some of those young people, they've not managed mainstream education, they've not managed residential placements, they don't manage in mainstream housing, and sometimes they get evicted from the housing because they're not managing it. That cost then comes back to children's services, where we have to look after these youngsters. And we have two or three of those that are costing us a lot of money. So in answer to your question about assurances about budget, I would like to give you that, but I can't. But we will always keep you updated on the issues that are facing us as a children's service. You've asked about in terms of growth. And again, Joan does a lot of liaison with Alistair's team, you know, with housing and whatnot, about how we can look at different ways of supporting our young people and how we can support them when their tenancies are at risk and whatnot. So there's a lot going on there. So that was assurances about the budget. It was about capacity. We're looking at that. And also the workforce capacity. We have found in Midlothian that if we grow our own, the people tend to stay. So we do offer our people opportunities to train as social workers, to train as our early years workers. And we've got our own training section that covers adults, that covers children's services and whatnot. And that's where we've had our most success. Where we've had people that come into the authority, they tend not to stay very long and then move on. But growing our own has been very successful for us. So we're doing that as well.
Okay, it's handy to know that and it's good to hear these things. But I think we just, round the table, I think we're a bit more assured over the last year that there's this connection, and we're hoping as we push forward that the new team are looking through Annette Lang, through ELLE, and we'll take forward, we'll help with that to make sure and identify vulnerable youngsters and at the same time identify vulnerable adults at that stage, and to make sure that, number one, they didn't get into any debt, but to help them get on that progression up the tree. And if we're finding youngsters aren't going to positive destinations, that there's a leg up there with training and that, to make sure that they take up the slack that we're needing. John, did you want to?
There's a couple of things. One, I'm just wondering if there's anything other than Scotland across the UK that's looking at some of these challenges in providing the type of care that we've just been discussing, the high tariff needs, because I can't see that changing. You know, every professional I speak to, children's needs are becoming more and more complex, and with the push to, you know, mainstreaming and keeping people out of institutions, which I know we would all support, what is happening nationally that's looking at that particular issue? And I'm just wondering, it's maybe a political point later, so you might want to ask it, but I'm aware that there were changes recently with regards to council's corporating responsibility being extended from 16 to 21. I'm just wondering if local authorities were given any more resources from the Scottish Government to help fund that responsibility.
So in answer to your first question, yes, there are discussions going on nationally. We're not the only local authority that faces these challenges with our young people. And it is about moving care closer to home. You've seen down south where, children are, come from Newcastle, but they're way down in Plymouth and things like that. So it's about how we place our children where the resources are. So there are discussions going on nationally, and certainly it's something that has to be looked at. And as I say, Joan is speaking with our colleagues and neighbouring authorities to see, is there something that can be done different? In terms of looking after children up to 21, so we have to provide support and care up to 21, but advice and support up to 25. So you may have a young person who goes to university, say at 21, they've got the qualifications and whatnot, we would be expected to provide advice and support. Now, that bit's not statutory, but the other bit is up to 21. So that's why I'm saying, if in housing a young person is evicted, then the responsibility comes back to children's services. Now, but we've had lots of discussions with Alistair's team, about that, and it's about how we prevent that and how we work together and how we can be more joined up. So there was funding for the up to 21 scheme, but it wasn't a lot of funding when you think about what a placement costs for a homeless placement or a homeless plus, because the young people are needing a level of support. The Cyrenians offer support, but again, very expensive supports. Again, the responsibility would lie with Children's Services to provide that. So we do get a bit of funding to remain corporate parents to youngsters up to the age of 21, but it doesn't meet the need of our young people.
Okay. Members quite happy? Are there any other points or any questions? Okay, thank you for that, Mary. Move on to 5.4, Customer and Housing Services. Alistair.
Thanks, Chair. So again, just picking out some key highlights. Obviously, the Council signed off with the Rapid Rehousing Transition Plan. It's been submitted to Scottish Government. A key strand of that work has been the focus on the housing first approach, which has proven to be successful in other areas in terms of actually moving to try and get people settled into accommodation at an earliest opportunity, and that helps them sustain that accommodation. So a kind of key approach for us there. Also just noting the commitment to the local letting initiative for Dander Hall for the new houses that come on stream there in March. And again, a welcome addition to the housing stock within the Dander Hall area. We've saw a big focus in terms of the channel shift in relation to customer services and the guarding waste was done predominantly online, almost all of it online, and certainly the vast majority of feedback and certainly the income that we brought in as a result of that has been hugely positive, and I think bodes well for the kind of moving forward in terms of that digital first approach that we are aiming to do, and aligning that to the wider approaches we want to take forward in relation to automation and the key role that the contact centre will have in working across with other council departments in relation to that. Just for noting, obviously, the Strategic Housing Investment Plan was also signed off during Q3. I suppose just also worth noting, because I'm aware that it was previously an issue in the report, I still note it as read, which is about our work with young folk in the schools in relation to homelessness. That has been taken forward to Q4, so we will deliver against that. But also just noting the team developed a youth homelessness SQA for pre-tenancy award, and our first kind of group of graduates came through in that, and it's something that we'd aim to build on. It's always a challenge to determine how big an impact that is having. We tried to look to see whether we're able to demonstrate that, but what we did have been able to demonstrate is very well received by young folk, and certainly the helping them understand the implications of getting their first tenancy has been really positive. I guess just picking up some of the pressures, obviously we continue to see pressures in homelessness, though we have saw a reduction in our relet times for temporary accommodation, and work continues in looking at options such as Jarnock Court that allows us to provide a far better kind of supported accommodation for those who are experiencing homelessness. Happy to take any particular questions.
Sure. Thanks, Alistair. Just first a comment first on the digital first approach, which I welcome, but I suppose just to say that we should never forget those who are excluded from digital services and access to online services as well. Just with regards to some of the alerts in there, Alistair, are you confident that we are taking appropriate action to tackle or mitigate some of the alerts? And on page 64, I note that through quarter of three now that we haven't delivered any of the education programmes that are critical to tackle the preventing homelessness. I do note that there is measures in place for quarter four and just looking for assurance that they'll be delivered.
Yeah, I specifically checked on that one because I'm aware we raised it the last time as well, and it's linked to the school timetabling, and so it's easier to do it in quarter four. And I think the last time we had the conversation, the beast from the east hit, which was about 12 months ago, which had an impact on us on the basis it's a lovely sunny day outside. We're assuming that's not going to happen. We deliberately put it at the end of the year in Q4 because it's easy for the schools to accommodate that.
Okay. Any other questions, Jim?
Just what can you emphasise the point that Stevie's making about the digital transformation? I mean, 100% behind the thrust to get as much interaction with the public transacted online. But I think what the garden waste experience has certainly showed me is that there are some individuals for whom doing that kind of transaction is just no possible or desirable. Right? I mean, there are some people who have, for various reasons, got a distrust to the banking circumstance and do everything in terms of cash. And I think it shouldn't be beyond us to get something set up that would allow exceptional circumstances where we could be taking money over the counter to pay for transactions. Because you know, as I say, I've had experience here, and we can't forget people that are in that circumstance. And in this instance, when it's brown bins, I suppose at the end of the day, you could turn around and say, well, look, you don't need to take the service if you don't want it. But that will only be the case for a whole host of services that we'll be trying to push to go online. So we do need to have some fallback position there. And I'm actually no clear yet, because I was told that we should have something in place for the brown bins for exceptional circumstances, but I'm still not aware that that's actually been put in place, and I would like some assurances that it's going to be.
Chair, I'll take the question, particularly in terms of garden waste. Certainly, as Councillor Muirhead has recognised, there is that channel shift to online, and we accept that that's predominantly going to be the means of business in terms of going forward. However, we appreciate and understand, and it doesn't anticipate that there would be a need for those who would not engage with an online service. Where we are with garden waste is the deadline for applications was on the 21st of February. That's now been paused to allow us to do the routing process, and also in order to get the bin stickers processed through and issued out. However, people are still continuing to make payments online, albeit this is in a paused process, and there are those cases which Councillor Muirhead and other elected members have raised with us in terms of looking at an alternative payment arrangement. Those people have been contacted directly about the means to do that, whether that's over the phone or cheque payment. We've also accommodated that, and again, working towards the cash over the counter. Again, there's a variation. We were looking for one solution, but there isn't one alternative solution in terms of making contact with people. So where those have been raised with us, we have made direct contacts with the customers concerned.
Okay. Any other members got any questions? I'm probably looking for here in housing services is to make sure, and I think I'm not wanting to repeat this idea, is that there's a joined up approach here. While some of your council housing is kind of backlogged a bit because of the pressure on education now that we should see freed up now, the reality is for like say areas that should be able to support older people or that, we should be able to move on at a pace for that, and it's about just making sure that we're taking that pace and we're planning stuff out to ensure that when we get to the end of the house building programme that we've taken a full volume approach here to make sure that we're picking up and trying to resolve a lot of our pressures and problems as we're moving with that. So it's just to kind of keep reiterating that. So, is there anybody else got any points you want to make? Okay, with that, thank you, Alistair. Item 5.5, Communities and Economy. Mary.
Thank you, Chair. As members are aware, the Communities and Economy Service covers seven discrete services as set out in the report. Each service area has highlighted progress in the delivery of strategic outcomes, which includes the launch of Pennycook Heritage Project, £3 million being invested in Pennycook, the customer service accreditation for building standards, developing new tourism activities in Midlothian, contaminated land remediation, the work's been completed, the community service receiving a silver award in recognition of the work done regarding the Armed Forces Covenant, and income maximisation for Midlothian residents of almost £1.2 million in quarter three. These are just a flavour of the work done in these services, and the report highlights many more. The report also highlights risks within each service, and members are requested to note these. Off-target areas members need to be aware of are complaints. Managers are tasked with improving the timescales for complaints. The environmental health review, the economic health, development review and planning review are nearing completion, so these reports should be with you in quarter four. CEP 9.1, page 84, is actually on target. And CEP 3.1 leader funding is actually on target, although it shows that they're off target, but they're actually on target. The climate change action plan, we've had a report to Cabinet that said we were well off target with that one, and that Peter Arnsdorf and Gary Sherritt will take forward in 2019-20, and that I would be the sponsor for that one. Thank you. Happy to take any questions.
Okay. Thank you. Questions and comments? John.
Mayor, I noticed the partnership with East Lothian Council's changing, and I'm just wondering what impact that might have with regards to trading standards, what impact that might have in terms of service delivery at this in this county.
East Lothian have appointed a new person for them, so now they're looking at a collaborative where we'll sort of share good practice, we'll share experiences, but it means that our three trading standards officers will be working in Midlothian. So that's the outcome of that.
Is there any other questions for Mary on the Communities and Economy? Mary, I take it we now have in place our new Economic Development Manager will be in place now. Ian Johnson leaving, is there plans to revamp the management style in there, any sort at all?
Okay, thank you for that one. So Anne-Marie McCaskill started on the 4th of February and she's made a very positive start. Very experienced economic development person from City of Edinburgh Council, comes with a vast range of experience, so she's hit the ground running, so that's really good. In terms of Ian's post, that's really part of the senior management review, and that's something that the Chief Executive will take forward in due course. but meanwhile I'm overseeing the economic development section. I think it's been quite good for me just to see the work that's ongoing in our planning teams, you know, that they've just received their best ever results. Our building standards team have achieved their award again, you know, so we're up there, we're punching above our weight there. I know that the economic development team, we need to be doing some work there, and we're very clear about what work needs to be done. Environmental health, you can see a number of reds against that, and you know that last year we reported there was a number of staff absences, long-term illnesses and whatnot, so hopefully we'll get that back on an even keel. At the moment we're reviewing our welfare rights and our community section with regard to the budget review. So lots of work going on, and I'm currently overseeing it, and as I say, I think it's been quite healthy for me just to get a bit more in-depth knowledge of teams that operate beneath my directorate. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for that, Mary. Any other points or questions? Okay, thank you. 5.6, education. Mary Smith Show.
Thank you, Chair. The Education Plan for 2018-19 set out three clear priorities for education: raising attainment and achievement, improving learning provision, and quality inspection and leadership of change. And the comprehensive report sets out our achievements in these priorities in quarter three. The challenges and risks section sets out a high number of risks facing education going forward, and these include the recruitment and retention of staff, which we've discussed here before, the new SQA arrangements for higher education, concerns that the teacher pay dispute is not resolved, you know that there's a meeting today, the rate of demographic growth, the lower uptake of music tuition, and the big one, the implementation of the 1140 hours. All of these are in hand, we're working with them, as I say, we have plans in place for all of this, but there are big challenges facing the Education Department. The off-target areas include the complaints. Again, within education, and it doesn't apply anywhere else, if someone makes a complaint on the last day of term, that is still day one. And if we haven't responded because it's the school holidays, whether it's an Easter holiday, whether it's an eight-week summer holiday, that clock is still ticking. So with the complaints in education, it's madness, and it is it's a national complaints survey, but the schools don't come back for 6 weeks. That clock has ticked the whole way through the 6 weeks. You can put a stop on it, but it still adds the days within the complaints. I have complained about the complaints procedure, and people are bored with me saying it, but it is an anomaly in the system. But again, we've got managers aware of the process of responding to complaints quickly. In terms of sickness absence, we've got low teacher absence. We're ranked 4 in the top quartile, and low absence, again, for our other staff, we're ranked 2 in the top quartile. Attendance, we're trying to improve our attendance. We've set ourselves ambitious targets, and work is ongoing. We haven't met those targets yet, but the work is ongoing. And the entitled twos, we've set ourselves an ambitious target of 200, and we're saying we're off target, but we've got 192 children have benefited from that across Midlothian. And again, Chair, it's your point. Are we working together with other agencies? And again, we are working with our partner organisations, but also working with our health visitors to make children aware that they are, some young children are entitled to this nursery provision at 2 years old. Hence, we've got very healthy numbers compared to other areas in Scotland. And I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Jim.
Yeah, we've got healthy numbers, but it's taken a fair bit of effort. I've said that here before, Mary, in terms of the entitled twos. If only we were able to get that information for the Department of Work and Pension, we wouldn't have to put all that effort in, and the money that we spend there and that could be better used, to be honest with you. It's a bugbear of mine, to be honest with you. you indicate about the complaints, Mary, and I understand, and you've mentioned it before, where, you know, these measurements will be calculated under set criteria. And we've got a situation where, as you say, somebody makes a complaint the day before the end of term, and, you know, it's not dealt with till after the term period or whatever. Is there any way, I mean, in a way that's kind of masking potential issues that we're not going to be aware of, is there any way that for internal purposes we could get that kind of stripped out or that kind of analysed a wee bit so that we can have the information that shows whether there's something more that we need to be concerned with? If that's kind of skewing the figures, can we kind of normalise these figures in some way for our benefit? I understand you've got requirements as far as how you present it here, but is there some way we can get that information without too much effort?
I'm sure there is. But the system is the system and doesn't let you circumvent it. But I think we can be putting forward something about, you know, 5 complaints were received on the last day of term, and so we'll strip out, you know, 120 days sort of thing. I think we can put that in.
Vic, and then John.
Thanks, Leader. Just maybe one or two observations, Mary. Looking at the test results, I find them a wee bit strange. There's good progress up to P7, and in fact, there is good progress up to S3, but these national figures seem to jump enormously, and we would appear in S3 not to be hitting the sort of targets that other authorities are hitting. I just find the national figures more strange than our figures. That's an observation. I am very pleased on page 105 that the new Battle Learning Community is developing the 3-14 digital literacy curriculum in conjunction with higher education establishments, and that it's being rolled out right across Midlothian. This is so important for our young people. I must admit, I wasn't aware on page 106 about the change to the hires. Maybe I should have been, that there's a move back towards examination focus rather than continuous assessment. I have to say I welcome that at that level. But obviously it is going to create a lot of issues, and I'm pleased to see that we are in fact going to monitor that in terms of the youngsters and presumably in terms of any appeal system. And finally, of course, music tuition. I was very pleased that we are continuing with music tuition, but I have said this on a number of occasions before. I think if it's going to have a sustainable future, it's got to be economic. And if we're starting to look out the box, I gather that there is a project in Wales where there are some external cooperatives or something like this. I suppose what I'm saying is I'm very keen for music instrumentation to continue, but I do think we're going to have to look at alternative ways of funding it. Otherwise, I fear we might be back here in 12 months' time having the same debate, and I think that would be a great pity. It's got to be managed. It's got to have new ideas. I'd say more observations. Thank you.
Thanks for that, Vic. And it's maybe worth mentioning that, you know, I would expect a lot of this stuff in a midterm review, and we were looking for future budgets quite early to be set in areas that we're looking at. So you might see a lot of stuff that's just been removed off the table coming back onto the table, and if we didn't persuade the government to give us a better settlement or a fairer settlement, then undoubtedly things will try to get tighter. John?
Thanks, Derek. It was, again, looking at the managing attendance or sickness absence figures, for education it's half or more than half less time off compared to the social care sort of things. And I know they're completely different jobs, but I'm just wondering what work happens between directorates around sharing information about promoting attendance at work and looking at the differences and sort of what's working and what isn't.
I think you answered the question. They're completely different jobs. I mean, we're talking about a qualified professional workforce who will come from a different socioeconomic background, etc. I mean, if I was to overlay this with our nursing colleagues against our clinical support workers, I would see exactly the same data. So I think there is a factor in there that goes beyond about someone's work. It's about their broader health and well-being. But in terms of what we share and everything else, what we're doing, we are doing a whole range of bits around helping folk be well and come into work, etc. And equally, it's also about the ability for managers to manage and have those difficult conversations. But I go back to the other point. I know you're looking quizzical at me, but there are absolutely key economic and social demographic factors between a qualified teacher and a social care worker that has a major impact on folks' well-being.
I think, but there's cleaners and classroom assistants and playground supervisors and school crossing patrol. You know, there's a mixture of professionals and non-professionals in both the care sector and in the education sector. And I know, you know, being in a classroom isn't going to be, I would say, as physical. You know, if you're requiring to look after an older person, that's manual handling and other things. But equally, there are people in schools that are doing manual handling and close contact with service users. And it's just making sure that we're trying to share that information. When you're looking at, I think, one department's averaging 12, 13, 14 days a year absence rates compared to 5 in education. Something's working somewhere and something isn't working somewhere else. So it's just making sure that that information is being shared amongst each of the services.
Yeah, I think probably the realistic answer to that is that the pressure that's on, for example, adult social care staff with a shortage of staff there and the slack that a lot of our staff are having to take up to be able to deliver a service. And I think that's why we need to get better at recruiting staff, whether it be the council or that, throughout. And I think that's the point that we're trying to make, is that when you've got the difficulty of having recruited staff in, then if there is a slippage, if there's illness or there's any holidays or that, then the other member of staff that's there is having to pick up the slack. And if you're working for 5 o'clock in the morning to 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, 4 days, you're looking forward to your 4 days off. If every time you go to get the 4 days, you're not getting them, then sooner or later, you fall doing the job. And again, how we plan for that, with getting more staff in, and I think that's the critical area there. Mary, one of the areas that I'm keen on to just making sure that we'll have a risk identified, and that's in the school catchments areas, demand for pupil places, and the demand right across the school, because we've got the three risks in the school capacities and catchment areas and the demand of pupil places. I'm just wondering whether there should be another risk identified in there. We talk about, and I don't know if you think it's covered by that, the increased population through local development, Midlothian, the fastest growing council area. I think there's also that risk there that developers are going direct to the Scottish Reporters Unit to appeal when we're clearly identifying where we didn't have a capacity and schooling, or are we resolving that capacity? Should we have a risk in there, the effect that has, or do you think it's already covered in there? Because if you take, for example, the appeal decision on site HS10, whilst the local development plan was agreed some 2 or 3 years back and developed over that period, it then became quite quickly clear just at the end of that system that pupil numbers that were coming were a lot higher than they were when we set the last local development plan, so therefore the capacity needed was a lot greater. Now so therefore, with the best will in the world and the best plans in the world, that the last administration couldn't have seen that in time to offset this. So do we need to put in a risk there and be aware of the risk that if there are planning decisions taken out with the council that grants consent, it has a very serious risk and a serious financial risk to us and being able to deliver these items.
Okay, thank you for that, Chair. Yes, we can put in another risk there. The learning estate strategy is currently being updated. We've got a meeting about that today. You know that that's a moving document. It's not a document that we did 2 years ago and it stays stagnant. It's moving. The Learning Estate Strategy document follows the Midlothian Development Plan and also our capital plan. And I think that gives elected members greater visibility in terms of decision-making at the Planning Committee. So the learning estate strategy, the update excuse me, will show, one, where we require new schools and where we'll get Section 75 contributions. It will show you what schools need refurbished and what the cost will be for that, and it will show our early years, so it will all be in one document. So again, that helps, you know, with decisions going forward. It also helps if things go to the reporter, if developers go to the reporter and say, you know, we don't want to pay developer contributions for this, that or the other. It will also help because we've got that document that shows the Midlothian Development Plan, that shows our learning state strategy, and it shows the capital plan and the gap. So I think that will be helpful going forward. But in answer to your question, yes, we can update the risks, Chair.
I think the area that I'm more looking at, and I'm aware we've updated where we are, and that should take care of the position for HS10. But prior to HS10, there were several areas where it was deemed we hadn't an adequate land supply, and areas out with the local plan were granted consent, which caused us a massive headache and a heck of a lot of money. And it wasn't the developer saying we're not willing to contribute. It was just actually the solution was well more expensive than what the cause the solution was. And it's just to make sure we're aware of that. If they're, because of the sheer pressure on building numbers in Midlothian, if developers decide to start that argument again that we haven't released enough land for the housing supply, or there are areas that are granted consent, we heard and we dealt with an appeal through the local review body that was identifying a site, for example, at Saltersgate there. Had it been granted, the knock-on effect there would have been horrendous to the council. And certainly, in my opinion, the developer contribution coming in would not have went any way to having met that. So it's just about making sure that we're aware of that risk, that happening, and what the effect of that risk is. Does anybody else have any other questions for Mary at that? Are you quite happy that we ask that we give consideration to another, that being put in as a risk? Because I think it is a genuine risk to us. John?
Just on that, Derek, I think you're absolutely right to raise that as an issue. And you look at the knock-on effect of the impact of the Planning Committee's decision to approve Rosalind Lee. And if those sorts of decisions continue, I can see nothing but bad things happening for everyone else in the county.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks, Mary. Commercial operations. Come on.
Thank you, Chair. So the focus for resources in quarter three has been in terms of our financial challenge, similar to other colleagues, and in terms of achieving the recovery plan. We've also had the programme of cross-service reviews, and for commercial operations, that's been in relation to waste services and land and countryside services, and forthcoming for road services. In addition to that, we also have in the past quarter seen the results of our strategic partnerships with the development of the energy from waste plant at Miller Hill, and also the continued collaboration of the Edinburgh Lothian Borders and Fife Road Services, where members look to agree the future programme. In addition, of course, we've had the arrangements in place for the winter service, unfortunately not had to rely on those to any great degree this year so far. Within waste services, we have drafted the comprehensive waste strategy, which will feed through to members through the cross-services service review. As has been mentioned, the garden waste collection service launched in terms of the payment option, and we've had a good response to that. As at Monday, we have a target of £600,000. We'd achieved, as at Monday, £450,000, and payments continue to come in, albeit, as I'd mentioned earlier, that is on pause at the present time to allow us to mark out the routing for those who have signed up already and processing through the sticker identification for bins. So we will reopen that again, but it will take us about 3 to 4 weeks to complete that piece of work before that further options are opened up to the public. In terms of land and countryside, as mentioned, the service review there had progressed in the last quarter and been completed, with those savings measures that were identified through the service review included in the Council's recent budget setting. There's also a range of outdoor activities detailed in the report there for members, but we draw your attention to the continued increase successfully in volunteer time, which has been developed for this service particularly. In travel services, we've been developing proposals in relation to staff travel with the travel team, and that again will contribute in terms of reducing travel costs council-wide. Within health and safety, there has been identified new activity income streams which are being achieved and certainly listed there relative to the work that my colleague Chris is leading on here. And for road services, we had completed the recruitment of the operation manager in the last quarter and continue to see good progress in the capital works across the roads and the footpaths resurfacing programme. And I'll pause for any questions there, Chair.
Okay, thanks for that, Kevin. Questions, John?
Thanks, Derek. Just up first, Kevin, looking at the health and safety, so it talks about identifying income streams, and then the risks, it talks about not meeting those income streams, and I'm just wondering how those two square up.
Thanks very much. So we've identified a number of streams that we're generating income on, and there's a bit of a mismatch, if you like. So in one of the areas we're generating as an internal health and safety function income from things like first aid training. Now we've pitched our prices at a highly competitive rate to encourage services within the council to use the service, but in practice the saving to the organisation in external spend is many times over the cash that we're generating as a function. So while the income target for our team was set at 100,000, we could achieve that as a council saving, if you like, but it won't be demonstrated as a cash saving or a cash income to our team because we're actually saving services at that expenditure. So if you like, the training that we've delivered over this year in terms of first aid has generated an income for our team in the order of just over £25,000. However, if we'd been buying that training in from outside the organisation, it would have cost nearly £70,000. So we're creating the saving for the organisation, but it's more difficult to clearly articulate that saving as an income through our team's budget. We'll reflect that in the quarter four information that comes forward that demonstrates not only the income that we've generated as a team through recharging internally and also external commercial work, but we'll also highlight the real cash term saving to the organisation, which will meet the cash target that was set.
Thanks for that response, because I think that type of information is really important as, you know, reflecting on the budget decisions, and a lot of our decisions are based on, you know, the types of income that's being generated or the overall cost to the council. If the figures we're looking at aren't truly reflective of what's happening in the real world, and obviously that means that we're not making the best decision at the time. So it's ensuring that anything like that is put through, because there'll be other services that are very similar, I'd imagine. I'm thinking, you know, back to sport and leisure as well, for land and countryside and a whole range of other services. With respect to the brown bin waste charge, can we just get an update on figures, number of houses that have signed up for that?
Yes, sorry, I don't have that to hand. I should have done that before coming in, but I haven't done it. I've just got the cost value. But yes, we have a dashboard which should be made available to members to view that in any event. So we'll make sure that's provided to you.
Okay. Kevin, while we're on the brown bins, we need and quite quickly need to be opening the gate here to people who want to come in and pay for this service. Just say to people, you've got to do it online, just not working for a lot of people. So how are we going to manage to open it up to people who simply want to come in and pay for this service?
Yes, certainly, as I say, we've paused the process at the moment because the deadline was the 21st of March for people to sign up to. And currently we're working out the routing for the trucks and the waste teams as a consequence of who has already signed up. After we've done that, which we anticipate to take us 3 to 4 weeks to complete that and get the stickers out to those who've signed up already, as I indicate, there are people still paying online. That's just being held at the present time, and then we'll incorporate that into the existing route planning that has already happened. So to answer your question, we will open it up again after that time, and the payment options which Councillor Muirhead referenced earlier in the debate are ones which are available at the moment. So for people who are raising issues with elected members, we have got back directly to those customers about whether it was, again, cash payment. We've taken cheque payments, I know, and I know we've also taken phone payments for those customers. So please do continue to alert us to those individuals so that we can respond to the customer.
Okay. Are there any other questions, John?
Thanks, Derek. Again, Kevin, on the part five, sorry, my page numbers are all different to everyone else's. It's looking at the P1 summary. It's looking at the hard landscaping service, and there was income, a target income of $632,000, but it looks likely that only about $350,000 will be reached, and I'm just wondering what the impact of that will have on the service's overall budget. And I'm aware in the past that staffing is the issue there. It's trying to find the staff that are able to carry out the work. But what steps is the service taking to try and recruit into posts?
Yeah, sorry, I can't see where that is in the report, but I do know that the site concerned was due to a planning, not to lay any problem to my colleague here, but there was a planning issue in terms of the developer there which prevented the expected lead on time taking place for our landscaping to be delivered on site. So that will still happen, but it will be at a delayed timescale than was anticipated. In terms of your question on the workforce, certainly we are continuing to provide apprenticeship placements through Land and Countryside. We're also consciously, again, having learned from our service review process, making the shift from general open maintenance to arboricultural work, because that's, again, income generating. It does take 2 or 3 years in terms of the training process for that, so it's clearly looking at that area of the workforce who's interested in that and maximising those other opportunities like the developers' contributions literally into us. But it's been pitching that at the right market rate, because, again, we've been learning that from recent experiences too.
Okay, is there any other questions? I think, Kevin, I'm really kind of interested in sort of seeing and hearing back from the officers as to how we're going to continue to push a more business-like manner into this area, because we have all the equipment there, we have the skips, we have the machineries and that, and Land Services, Justin Venton's done quite a good job. I think that's why Ian Welsh, it's the income maximisation person there, and it's about turning this round. One of the things I was keen on the new roads manager was to emphasise there was a need to actually go out and have a look at how other councils and how the private sector work to push for income, because a lot of the risks in there can be mitigated if we can drive a more commercial head with us, where we can actually make money from carrying it out. If you look at, for example, in some areas, a lot of landscaping are pushing to take over factoring work and that, and I'm quite surprised at how little we do. But I think the important thing when speaking to the Land and Countryside manager is to make sure when he's measuring that work that he can effectively put a price to it, so that we can tender for that, because it's the sort of thing we should be pushing it here. Again, I think there's an open door there. Developers are keen to hand these areas over to what are called factors. And I think with the growth we've got, there are these opportunities, and I'm not sure that I've seen anything in the paper. It talks about the challenges, it talks about the risks, it doesn't talk a lot about the opportunities, and I think there's a lot of opportunities in here for these areas. You know, why are we watching all the time when a new development comes on? Why are we not tarring the roads there? You know, I think we need to be pushing managers to be thinking a lot more business-like and with a commercial head on to try and pick up this new work. Because, quite frankly, at least when we do it, we know what's in the ground is up to standard. So it's really important, I think, that each of these areas look at this and theirself, but also look to see what other councils are doing, and are they doing stuff better than us that we need to learn for that can maximise income for us, or is there a way we can work with the local authorities? Can we take partnership up with some private sector areas to help work? And I'm certainly not talking about privatising anything. I'm talking about us working along with our partners to see how we can learn and direct and reinvest the money in our own services.
Yes, certainly not disagreeing with any of those points at all. And certainly the collaboration that we've been doing with neighbouring authorities on the road services particularly is one that we saw developing along those lines. That may be less of a prospect from what we understand Transport Scotland may be intervening in the coming year. But again, as you say, it's working through that best practice and where we can work together collectively. We look at the model, and I'll cite Tayside Contracts here. It's one that we've looked at before. It's a matter of scale, which is a different league from where we are, but there are still those potential opportunities. And certainly the heads of service and the respective authorities are continuing to pursue that for those who are interested in doing so. Similarly, in land and countryside, on the back of recent budget decisions, there are those areas that we're withdrawing from, but it's also given us then the opportunity of shifting the workforce, as I say, who are interested in the income-generating areas of work. And we do continue to canvass for business on the back of what's been carried out for developers already, because, again, we had essentially a loss leader contract going there, but it got us in there. The quality and standard of work, as you say, has proved its own, and they're coming back as a consequence, but equally, we're raising our rate to make that viable in the market as well now.
Okay, Vic.
I really feel I've got to respond, Leader. I was absolutely delighted to hear what you have just said, because I believe that is the only way we are going to be able to match budgets in the coming difficult years. We have got a lot of equipment, as you say. We've got a lot of people, and look at education, I look at our school buildings. We have got massive opportunities for income generation. We can't simply just keep putting charges up, putting council tax up, keeping cutting. I'm sure we could be doing a lot of things, as you have highlighted. So I think it has to be a priority, and it has to be a priority in our schools to make our young people think about enterprise as being an important area. So I just was so pleased to hear what you had to say there, because I do think that is the way for the future. Thank you.
That's what you didn't hear me say, in fact, that worries folk. But it clearly is. We need to get a business like head on. We have all that stuff lying there. Most of it's used for 7 o'clock in the morning to 4 o'clock at night, where the reality is a lot of that equipment could be running, as the private sector do, 24 hours a day, keeping our guys in working and attracting more people. And you're right about right across the board. You know, we should be using schools better. They didn't need to be 9 o'clock to 4 o'clock issues. We shouldn't be building new leisure centres when we could be using schools and usages there. And we're seeing that door opening. There's still in some areas. There's still, this is my part of the world, and it's, you're not allowed in it. But we're pushing the doors open, and it's really important here that we all think along the lines of, you know, how does it better deliver? You know, I can remember the ex-head teacher, Ken Thompson, at Lasswade High School, when we went to meet him on a fact-finding mission about the different prices being charged anywhere. And his view in the world was, he looks at his leisure side yet to see how much income he can get, and he revolved his timetable in round that. We then went to another school who tell us the exact reverse. He found it a pest that folk were in there, and it just gives you that difference in the way you're thinking. And it's about trying to get everybody corporately round to thinking we have to be smarter, we have to be sharper, and we have to drive income, and we have the tools to do it, so let's do it. When you take John's point about the slippage in land services, we've already asked in the bottom-up review to make sure that something through our HR department. So if Justin Venton needs a couple of guys for 3 or 4 weeks to carry out a job, there has to be a way he can employ the folk. You know, can he have retired folk on the bank? I'm not fussy what way they do it, but they simply have to be able to do it and be able to stay within policy. and that's important. But it is about bringing in the policies that, in extraordinary cases, allows managers the flexibility to become business-like. And it's really important. We have been stressing that throughout, and the bottom-up reviews, we're making a real point of saying that. We need to make sure when managers are pricing jobs that they're priced accurately, that they have the tools to be able to price them accurately, and that they're commercial, because there's no point taking them on if we're going to lose, unless, as the director says, it gets us in the door. And that's just having a business need, you know. And it's the same way, like, it's attracting. We've got that new Battle High School up there. You know, we should be doing a lot more to drum up, to encourage people to take Tone Zone membership and all that. Right across the council, we need to get more of your business head on. And you're starting to see that moving now. I've got to say, with Grace's new direction and the changes that we have here and the team that are here now, they seem to be getting that momentum up. So let's just hope that it continues. Anybody else on this area? No? Okay. Thank you. Finance and Integrated Service Support.
Thanks, Chair. Clearly the focus in the past quarter has been on the financial strategy, and particularly with a focus on our sustainability and the financial management. Also, the team have been progressing the actions relative to the recommendations set out in the External Auditor's Annual Report that was before Council. Also, in terms of the workforce, our other major resource, there's been continued review and development of our people policies, with those developed for sexual harassment, immigration and gifts and hospitality. The recruitment practices, as has been referenced with my other colleagues in terms of our retention and recruitment, are currently being reviewed to look at a series of other options to continue our successful recruitment and indeed our retention levels. Across the council, we'd carried out the employee survey in the last quarter, and the survey results have been issued and actions for continued improvement are being progressed with the teams directly. Also, another external factor is the Brexit for the EU settlement scheme, as how that impacts on our workforce. There is work that's ongoing both within HR and again with my colleague here, Chris, in terms of the work that we're doing for the preparation on that. Within our digital projects, we have been carrying out the purchase to pay through invoice approvals, developing the payroll rationalisation, and also the preparation for PSN accreditation through our cybersecurity work has been ongoing in the past quarter. We're progressing through the Council's capital strategy, much as that was approved at Council last year. We're reviewing the capital plan because of the investment pressures there are, and also in reflection of the growing population of Midlothian. And happy to take any questions, Chair.
Thank you. Questions and comments? Okay. Alistair, I'm kind of just wanting you to try and explain one of the higher risks. The DS information, the DS compliance regulatory contract, chural and legal. It's on page 173-290 or page 21 of this. This is a risk of censure and includes DPA, FOI, Freedom of Information, RIP, computer misuse. Identify areas of poor practice, eradicate users with the information security responsibility. Could you just give us a wee bit more detail of what this all quite means? It's kind of baffling me. Sorry, Kevin.
I take offence at that, however. From the leader as well as my colleague. This is part of the work that I'd referenced in the overall narrative about our compliance clearly with the regulated and security measures. We've been getting our PSN, there's a penetration exercise that's been getting carried out relative to external attacks on the council's network. There's also requirements in terms of GSX, which is being withdrawn relative to a new state for that happening. So it's really just it's making sure that we are compliant with all those external partners and agencies that we work with to the acceptable degree that we can continue to share the respective information for carrying out the business as usual level across the freedom of information, data protection, the regulation of the RIPSA work there, and again our external partners such as the NHS and Police Scotland, so that we're at an equitable base to be transferring information between all those public agencies.
Okay, thank you. I think I kind of understand that a bit. The other one that kind of, I'm hoping it's just baffling me, is the access control and the cyber security attacks is marked as a high risk. Is that just a high risk because, for want of a pun here, there is a high risk that we're likely to be attacked, and there's no a high risk there. There's need, I would imagine every council will have this the same. We're not a higher risk than anybody else. It's just that we regularly see cyber attacks on government, banks, business, and I take it that's why that's marked at high risk. No, because there's something we're not doing that we could be doing.
Absolutely right. It's the regularity of that, because it is actually happening, if not daily, weekly, that the team here on this level are continuing to address that through our cyber security. It's an area clearly that has been focused on and one that's growing, and in the redesign of our digital services, it's one that we know we need extra capacity in. But yes, it's to give you that reassurance. It's high because of the regularity rather than the exposure to it.
Okay, is there any other questions for Kevin? And I do apologise for calling you, Alistair. I can see why you're offended. Okay. Yep, sorry. Proper and fine. And facilities, quarter three.
Thanks, Chair. The focus here in the last quarter for property and facilities management has been in delivery of the major projects and also looking at alternative delivery models. So that's been provision of new facilities, such as New Battle, replacing those that are no longer fit for use, such as the old New Battle, and the refurbishment of existing facilities, such as Pennycook Town Hall. Within facilities services, the focus has been on the recovery plan, and we've certainly in this current quarter seen increased activity in terms of the promotion of our cafes and the income streams as a result of that. There has been the pre-planning process relative to Destination Hill End. We have within sport and leisure had the sport and physical activity strategy agreed at council. There's a range of events and awards and accreditation as a consequence of the activity across sport and leisure. We also had the full implementation now of the new leisure management system, which allows us to analyse usage and income, and that will help us as we go into the service review for sport and leisure, which is one of those within the resources programme, and that commences tomorrow with the cross-party group. The property assets we have reported to council in terms of the waste to energy project, also based at Miller Hill, so there's that read across with our commercial operations to develop the business case for a district heating scheme, as it will then link into the build out of Shaw Fair, New Town. We've had the grant award reported to council from the Scottish Government allocation on the low carbon fund. And also there we've notified of the number of sites that have been purchased for the social housing programme and also for the school estate. And clearly, again, there's a focus in terms of the budget challenge for recovery of that position, particularly for property and facilities management. And as I say, there is indications of progress there into quarter four. And happy to take any questions, Chair.
Questions, comments for... Jim.
On page 179 under the progress report, Kevin, there's a sentence here. Building services have identified recovery of Scottish water contributions to the value of £500,000 from projects over 5 years old. £380,000 been recovered to date. Can you explain what that is?
It's it's a piece of work that's been done through our surveyors, but I will need to come back to you with the detail of what that is exactly, so that because I don't have that with me, I'm sorry.
If memory serves me right, Jim, I think that's a project we led and been able to get additional supplies of water up at Gore Bridge, where the council took the lead and put in the infrastructure and then rebuild a lot of development in that for Scottish Water.
I thought it might be that, but I'm just wondering why, you know, they've identified recovery of contributions. Has there been, why is there, we've had to do that basically, what is what I was really wanting to find out.
I suspect that would be the 2007 crash but that came along, because I think we paid for that just prior to that to allow our house building programme to move ahead. And then the crash came along and everything slowed right down. And I think it's the development on that side in your area that particularly should have contributed towards this. And I think the risk was one that was highlighted to us. But I'm sure Kevin will come back to us that if it's there, because I think it was something that was made clear to us at that time. But if I'm wrong on that, Kevin, I'm sure you'll correct us. But anyhow, it'd be better to just circulate that so that we do know. Okay. Kevin, just... No, that's fine. Sorry, I'm on the wrong one. Okay, is there any other questions on this? None? Okay, thank you. Now over to you, Grace, for the Midlothian Council Quarter 3 Performance Report.
Thank you. Following on from the Quarter 3 reports from each of the individual services, this report pulls together the information into one overview community planning report. Please note that there is also an error in the first row of the table on page 211. I'm pleased to say that should read as an overspend of £202,000, as was reported to Council back earlier in February, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Are there any questions or comments? Given we've just went through one by one, none. Okay, members quite happy to thank you. Okay, 5.11 is local benchmarking results, report by Chief Executive.
Thank you. The purpose of this report is to provide Cabinet with the LGBF overview of the Council's performance against indicators for 2017-18 as recently published. Section 3 outlines the current position and shows that Midlothian is now performing in the top two quartiles and 6% more indicators than the previous year. And Cabinet is asked to note the LGBF results as shown in Appendix 1 of the report.
I think the upward trend's to be welcome, but I think we've got to continually make the point that we're looking for each of the areas to get up to the top, certainly the top two, but certainly we prefer them being in the top quartile. And it's really important that we continue, even though I understand the pressures that staff are under and officers are under, to make sure they're delivering with a reduced overall budget to a heightened amount of people, but it's really important that we try and push these areas. Are members happy to note the recommendations? Any questions, comments, none? Okay, thank you, Grace. 5.12, European Union. Chris, you've been waiting patiently.
Thank you very much, Chair. So this report is aimed at providing Cabinet with an update on the current risk, I suppose, facing the organisation in terms of UK leaving the European Union with no deal. So the external perspective is that we've got a range of guidance that's been produced by UK government, over 105 guidance notes that are service-specific but indicate the potential implications for business of a no-deal exit from the European Union. In addition to that, there's guidance which has been provided by the Scottish Government, and there are links to both sets of guidance that are available. In preparation for a no-deal exit, the Scottish Resilience preparations led by the Scottish Resilience Group, SCORD, have been sharing information more recently with local authorities. One of the pieces of work that they've shared with us have been a range of UK planning assumptions So this is over and above the guidance that had been made available already to organisations. UK planning assumptions are considered confidential and sensitive in their nature, but they're being shared both with the Scottish Government and with local authorities, police and other key partner organisations to allow us to plan as best as possible for the potential impacts that a no deal would bring with it. There have been a number of assertions made within that paper that identify reasonable worst-case scenarios that we need to be planning and preparing for. In terms of Council preparations, Council has been aware of the decision of the UK to leave the European Union. That's been highlighted in a range of reports that have come forward through the Council management team and to Council. The risk management reporting has reflected the risk both in terms of reports to Council management team and to Audit Committee. From October 2018, efforts have been increased with Heads of Service to direct Heads of Service at that point to the guidance that was available from the UK Government and to start to consider what the implications of a no deal would look like in services. More recently, we've had further advice and guidance through the Scottish Resilience Forum, and we're making preparations for that. Work is currently underway across services through a Brexit working group to revise the previous risk assessment activity to take account of these new planning assumptions and reasonable worst-case scenarios. And involved in that, we're reviewing business continuity provisions to ensure that we can respond to the challenges that the organisation may be faced with. Happy to take any questions.
Questions, comments, John?
Just on that latter point, Chris, about the business continuity plans, what assurances, maybe for the directors, what have you done to ensure that the staff on the ground know what the business continuity plan is and how they've been involved with developing it?
So the stage we're at just now is that across all services, we're refining the risk assessment activity. So there's risk assessment work that's been undertaken. That's been refined, taking into account the reasonable worst-case scenario UK planning assumption information that's available, in addition to information that professional associations have provided to officers within individual services. And in response to that, we'll be reviewing the business continuity plans that we've got across the organisation and service-specific. We've undertaken through some external bodies. So, for example, one of the key potential exposures for organisations may be in relation to supplies of services or supplies of goods. Some of those goods we procure ourselves. Some of those goods we procure through Scotland Excel. Now, Scotland Excel has done some good work on behalf of members that are part of that and have been able to provide us with confidence and reassurance about some of those supplies of goods and services. Work that we'll be continuing over the coming weeks is to finalise the information on suppliers and so on that we have as critical suppliers to our critical service delivery outcomes for as an organisation. And if there are any gaps there, we'll be looking to ensure that we've got a business continuity framework that supports ongoing delivery of critical services to our most vulnerable people across Midlothian.
Thanks for that. And that's quite reassuring to know that around, you know, some of those national issues are being picked up. I was thinking more of, well, as of today, what the business continuity plan is for my service and making sure that the staff are at least aware of the one that exists presently and that it will be updated at some point in the near future, reflecting some of the outfall from Brexit. And the reason why I mention that is just I know other local authorities, when there was Beast from the East, it was really unclear what was meant to be happening. You know, red weather warnings and people being told not to come into work, being instructed to go into work. And in my view, the business continuity plan should lay out a lot of that. So it's making sure staff, not just on Brexit, but every day of the week, as it were, knows what should be happening whenever there's a crisis or an emergency.
So just to come back on that, you're right, Beast from the East did provide the organisation with a number of learning points, and those have been actively being progressed following the debrief that we had from the Beast from the East incident. In terms of business continuity arrangements within services, services have an understanding of the key priorities that they need to deliver against and how they would resource those immediate priorities. The difference here to other emergency type incidents that we may be faced with as an organisation, our business continuity plans typically operate on the basis that they allow us to consider a generic response to a whole range of incidents. This is an unusual scenario because we know or we've got a greater insight as to what's coming and the potential date thereafter where we'll have an impact. So we're able to undertake further work to refine what our business continuity response will be to the range of impacts that may be experienced as a result of Brexit.
Okay, is there any other questions on Brexit? Okay, thank you, Chris. We now move into private session.